It looks like we may have come to the end of the beginning with this virus, but certainly not the beginning of the end. And while we adapt to life under restrictions, some actual disease detectives have been getting on with their jobs, tracking down people who have COVID-19 and working out who they may have come in contact with. Pretty soon, their vital role may be aided with a new tracing app from the federal government, which, if we choose to download it to our smartphones, could help link virus contacts together through encrypted data. Here's the Federal Minister for Government Services, Stuart Robert.
Remember, this is all about seeing who you've been in contact with, not where you are. Think about if you got the virus and State Health asked who you were with 10 days ago, you wouldn't know. You can't remember the name of the lady in the queue behind you at Woolies. Well, if everyone's running the app, the data is securely on the app, it only goes to State Health officials if you're test positive for the virus. No Commonwealth agency sees the data. It's only used for health and it's only used to protect you.
And we're keen to hear your thoughts on this contact tracing app. Will you be downloading it onto your phone? You may have heard how the app stores and uses your information and for how long. So are you comfortable with taking part? Drop us your reactions on Facebook. Just look for RN Life Matters. Before we get to the app, though, let's meet one of those at the front line of tracking down cases of COVID-19. Dr. Anu Anuradha is a public health physician with Brisbane's Metro South Health Division. And Anu, welcome to Life Matters.
Hi, thanks, Michael.
Do you mind if I call you a disease detective? Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, indeed. I think that's probably apt terminology to say, good, because that's what we're doing.
So I think we're all kind of fascinated about how this works from your point of view. You're notified, I take it, by state health authorities about a confirmed case of coronavirus. And then what happens after that?
That's correct. So our team is involved in this key strategy of contact tracing. And what happens after that is we verify the details and the diagnosis and then make that first phone call to the patient. Sometimes they are expecting a result and sometimes it comes as a surprise to them.
Oh, so but you team, deliver the verdict on the test, do you?
That's correct.
Right. So not only are you dealing with tracing from them, but also telling them the bad news.
Indeed, yes. But our team are very well versed and trained in this because our first and foremost concern after confirming their identity, we make sure that they are well. So we mm-hmm. ask about their health and their symptoms. Most people have mild symptoms, but on occasions we do find they are quite unwell or even short of breath on the phone, and we stop there and we get them urgent medical attention and or ambulance and things like that so that they get the help they need.
I can imagine you must have well-trained people because I can imagine too that if you're well and you're told that you've been tested positive, that's going to be shocking. And if you're
yes.
unwell, it may confirm your worst fears.
That's correct. So, as I said, the team is aware of the sensitivity around this. So some people, it comes as a shock and a surprise, and while others may expect it. But our team deals with it using their emotional intelligence and making sure that the news is delivered in a way that is correct and also giving them the right information.
And then, of course, comes the next step where you then ask them, I take it, who have you had contact with in the last, what, fortnight?
Absolutely. So it is, there are two elements to it. So while we go through what symptoms they have had, etc., and are continuing to have, we also want to know the exact date of their onset of symptoms. And that's important for us for two reasons. One being that anyone with COVID-19 is infectious or they could have potentially given it to others for about 48 hours even before their symptom onset and continue that until we've told them. And most people isolate as soon as they get symptoms, but they wouldn't be aware of it in that 48-hour period. So that's date of onset of symptoms is very important for us.
So you get you get that date and then you say, now I want you to remember 3 or 4 days back from that date.
That's correct. So we we calculate from that time for 2 days prior to that what they had been doing.
Right.
And that's to say what whom they could have potentially given it to. But there is another reason for why we want the onset of symptom date known, because that's the detective work we also do. So they have got the infection from someone in the 14 days or 2 weeks prior to their onset of symptoms.
Yes.
So we also ask them to recall where they had been, etc. It's
that's an enormous task,
if they'd been,
isn't it? That's an enormous
absolutely,
task.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So it's easier if they'd been overseas or come into contact if one of their household members had the disease, for instance, and they're already in quarantine. Those things are easy because we know where they've acquired it from. But in other instances, we may not know where they have acquired it from, and so we do go through that history as well.
Anu, is one of the reasons why perhaps, and I'm surmising here, that your work has become less onerous perhaps in the last couple of weeks, is because Australians, you know, overall have been pretty good at staying home and following physical isolation. Does that mean, therefore, their contact history is far more minimal than it would have been at the onset of the virus?
Oh, definitely, because we know that people have not been out and about so much, and they're only doing work in essential offices and things like that. So it certainly is less compared to what we perhaps will need to do once we widen this and open up the restrictions and so on. So that's what we are preparing for that.
I was going to ask too, how challenging is it to follow up on people's imperfect memory?
Well, it can be quite challenging, yes. Most people rely on recall. They consult their family members sometimes as to what they had been doing, etc. There are others who are very good in maintaining a diary, for instance, of where they had been and what they had been doing. People use their phones. They have electronic calendars that tell them where they had been. As recently, we had a person who worked in an office and had multiple meetings over the two-day period before the onset of their symptoms. But they could give us exactly the dates, the times they were at the meetings, and the invitees at the meeting through their Outlook calendar app, for instance.
Yes, I can imagine corporate diaries would be incredibly valuable. But of course, if everyone's working from home, or if they're not working because they've lost their job and they may have contact unwittingly with total strangers, how do you then find those people?
Well, if they had been, for instance, to the supermarket, we are not going to be able to track that down. But if they had, what we are more concerned about and ask them questions about are places like if they visited their GP, for instance, if they had been to an office setting where we know there are identifiable people, or to a school or university where we know who the people that they could have potentially come into contact with, then those are the things that we track down. And we sometimes, or in instances where there are lots of people to track down, we seek their permission to contact their boss, manager, or principal of the school, for instance, and then they give us details of potential people who could have come into contact with them.
Right.
And then that's where this thing comes about of we may have to close down the workplace or the school for a day or two so that we can contact each of them and see what level of contact they had with the patient. And of course, we seek explicit consent from them to reveal their identity, etc., if required.
Have you had any cases where potential contacts have simply refused to give you information?
Yes, certainly there are some difficult situations that we face, but in the majority, I should say, Australians are very good in revealing their details and cooperating with us in the investigation.
Well, can I ask you on this? It just came to me. If someone is going to report to you their contact details with other people in their lives as part of your tracing through second, third generations of contact. And that contact may involve illegal activity or activity that is against regulations within states. Are you required to report that activity to police?
That's certainly a tricky question, but we do act in conjunction with our legal team within the Department of Health and within the Hospital and Health Service to make sure that we are not breaching any confidentiality issues, etc.
The reason I ask is I imagine some people may not be as forthcoming as you'd like because they're worried that they will be discovered doing the wrong thing.
Oh, absolutely. It is. It certainly will be a mixed bag of people that we come across. But I cannot overemphasize that we do have a lot of people who do the right thing.
Good to hear. And Anu, just before I let you go, the government's proposed contact tracing app, are you in support of this?
I think anything that will help us do our job of contact tracing better is certainly a desirable one. It certainly may help speed up the process, make it quicker, more efficient, and give peace of mind to all. I'm not aware of the intricacies of the app per se and how it would work, and we probably have to wait and see because we don't have any precedents to this. But anything that would help this key strategy, I think, is a very welcome idea.
Well, we're about to get into some of those intricacies right now. But in the meantime, Dr. Anu Anuradha, thank you so much indeed for taking the time. It's been great.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Dr. Anuradha is a public health physician with Brisbane's Metro South Health Division, and she was talking about her day-to-day job as one of a team of contact tracers, disease detectives, if you like. What do you think, though, about the government's coronavirus tracing app? Do you intend to download it? Do you see it as your civic duty? Or do your privacy concerns outweigh community concerns? There's so much already on Facebook, but we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. You can drop us a comment at RN Life Matters. Michelle Price is the CEO of Aust Cyber, which is an independent body that's been helping to review this contact tracing app yet to be released. Michelle, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Michael. Great to be with you.
Will you be downloading the app when it's released?
I will be.
Tell us Absolutely. Why you feel so confident about that.
Probably because I've got some great people on the job to do some independent security assessment of what's being built. And that provides me with some pretty high assurance that the right questions are being asked, but also those questions are being answered. In addition to the security side, there's also some very good work being done by the National Privacy Commissioner around a privacy impact assessment, which is going to be released publicly. And that's actually the first time the government is making an impact assessment of that kind available to the public.
Do you think the government has learnt from some of its botched attempts at data retention and privacy in the past? I'm thinking here about the My Health Record data breach and also the complete schmozzle around the census. Do you think that's informed them? Have they learnt lessons there?
Michael, I think they have. And this stuff is really tricky. It's really, really complex stuff. I think where a couple of things that listeners do, I think, need to appreciate is that there's nothing in the world that can give us 100% security. There will always be a bad person out there that can find a way in. The most important thing that we have available to us is the means to be able to do the best we can as humans, but also with some software to give the highest possible assurance around these things, but also what actions we take if something does go wrong. And often what we get wrong as humans when something bad does happen is the communication. And I do see lots and lots of evidence through the development of this app of both ministers, but also government officials really taking the time to understand how to communicate this to the public and how to work through what we need to do to give that very high level of assurance. I'm seeing some differences to answer your question, yes.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the ways this is going to operate. And tell me if I'm wrong. The data is kept on your phone until you come into contact with someone that's infected. In that case, that triggers the data to be released from your phone and that other person's phone to the state health authority. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
So the information will go through to a database, and that database is what's then accessed by the health authorities. That particular feature of how all of this is going to work is actually very, very standard practice. And so I've learned a lot about this in being involved in this, the development of this app, around how the state authorities around the country have years and years of practice around managing infectious diseases, and that side of it is all very straightforward and normal. There's no changes to normal practice in that regard.
What I think still concerns many Australians who are wondering, perhaps like Susan on Facebook, who says, "I'm undecided, convince me," is what happens to that data collected at the end of the pandemic?
It's a great question. So we have assurances at the moment, as all Australians do, from Minister Robert. And I've also had those assurances doubled down on by the agencies involved from government, that the data will be deleted. So
An assurance, though, Michelle, sorry to interrupt. An assurance is one thing. Legislation to protect us is another. There is no legislation, right?
Not at the moment, but there's no specific legislation at the moment, and I don't know what the government's going to do on that, because, you know, we're just focused on getting the app secure. But there's other types of legislation that provide those assurances at the moment. So if we look at, for one example, the data retention legislation that's been in place in Australia for the past couple of years, requires that if you state there's an end date to it, there's many mechanisms, independent mechanisms, to test government whether or not they have in fact not just switched off the use of that database, but also deleted it.
Okay. And they do promise that the code for this app will be open source. It will be available to look at and see. The government wants us, at least 40% of us, to take up the app. If only 10% do, is it still useful?
I actually can't answer that question. I don't think that's up to the health officials. And I knew obviously indicated there that there will be some utility. Certainly, of course, it's a bit like herd immunity, though, is what we're getting a sense of here. And that's coming from the experiences of the 17 other countries around the world so far that have produced an app of this kind, that you need around about 40%. And in some cases, depending on the population size and the way in which that population lives density wise, you might need more than that. But some data could still be useful. And in Australia, obviously, we have a population that's spread right across the land, but we've got densities in particular places, and it could be useful for that, I'd suggest.
All right, Michelle, it sounds like there's a few questions yet to be answered on this, but it's been great to talk to you. Thanks very much indeed.
Thanks so much, Michael.
Michelle Bryce, CEO of Aust Cyber, which is an independent body which has been helping to review this yet-to-be-released contact tracing app.